Welcome into ESPN FC. Kay Shaka and Craig Key are with you. We've also be joined by Jules Laron because we'd like to talk a little more about the situation with Harry Kane and Spurs. And Jules, was he or wasn't he at the stadium on Sunday? What's the latest you've got for us?
That's the big question. Everybody was looking for him. Is he there? Is he not there? We knew he was not in the squad, in the matchday squad. That was for sure. He has a box, obviously, at the Tottenham Stadium as well. There were rumours that he was there on English television, for example. Mentioned that maybe he was somewhere there, but no one saw him. No one took a photo of him. So that would stay a mystery.
It's an odd situation, isn't it, Craig? We obviously know that City are in for him. Spurs are not saying too much. And then people are questioning whether he's actually there for the first game or not, whether he's injured, whether he's fit to play.
Yeah, and it's not ideal for... And this is what transfer windows and transfer deadlines do. And I'm a great believer... And I know it's difficult, but I'm a great believer this should all be done and dusted before the opening day. If they could sync the opening day of seasons around Europe, for example, at least they could curtail the European transfers. That's another story. The bottom line is he should have been at the game, but I'm sure if he was, a camera would have found him. So I presume he wasn't there. But that's, again, that's the side story. The story is here, for those that watched the game, City were poor. Once again, they have a gaping hole through the middle. They're desperate for a front man, even though they won the league without one last year. And Tottenham are holding all the cards because he's Tottenham's player, he's under contract, and Daniel Levy, we know, likes to play hard ball right to the end. So I think this deal will happen, but I think Tottenham are going to absolutely screw every last penny out of Manchester City that they can.
But if they won the league without him last year, why do they need him this year?
Well, because I think they won it last year because they adapted without him. Aguero was there at times, Jesus was there at times, but I think to do that on a regular basis is difficult. That's the reason that we have the likes of Karim Benzema at Real Madrid. That's why we have the likes of Lewandowski at Bayern Munich, because it's difficult to replicate that season after season. You can maybe get away with it once, maybe twice, but there's a reason that these natural 30 goal plus a seasons are worth their weight in gold, because clubs still need them.
You're asking a lot of a midfield who were outstanding last season. Whether you can get the same tune, goal-scoring tune, out of the likes of Gundogan, Kevin De Bruyne, who had his injury issues. You're asking a lot from a midfield to carry this team to another title. Another title, and the Champions League still continues to be Manchester City's holy grail. As we sit right now, certainly what we saw, and albeit the season's only 90 minutes old, I'm with everybody on this one. I don't think City are good enough to do that on both fronts. To Craig's point, though, and Daniel Levy playing hardball up until the last minute, you wonder how does that best serve Spurs? To play hardball with Harry Kane up until the transfer window is all but shut, leaving yourself no time to find a replacement, no time to really find somebody to fill the gap that Harry Kane then leaves. So you end up kind of being stuck. Do you keep Harry Kane, a disgruntled Harry Kane? Do you go without an out-and-out striker yourself? It's a weird game of chicken, almost, that Daniel Levy seems to be playing with Man City and Harry Kane.
This is very negative. Tottenham were great yesterday.
They were.
I mean, you know, and this is the big story, but, you know, he wrung every last ounce out of that team. And Heung-Min Son did a great job through the middle. Lucas Moura did a great job, as always, working his socks off. You know, Tanganga was excellent. The midfield was solid. I mean, Dele Alli hardly got a game last year. So things could change there. And I wonder whether Daniel Levy is concerned about losing Kane and leaving Nuno Espirito Santo with a man down. I think to him, at short term, the money is more... Getting the right fee is more important, and then I think he'll say to his manager, right, this is the way we did it. Now you're going to have to go and deal with it.
But doesn't that suggest that he should do it sooner so that they can get the right replacement?
Yeah, but he's not going to do it sooner until he gets the deal that he wants. Exactly. He's a hard-nosed businessman. And that's what he's going to do. He's going to, if it's another 5 million, he's going to wait.
Yeah. If he doesn't leave himself enough time, though, before the window closes?
The catch-22 for that is, now Daniel Levy, being a businessman and not necessarily a football man, says, well, we beat Man City without Harry Kane, without a striker, and maybe we don't need to go and spend 100 million of the 150 odd or whatever it eventually brings in. And that's the challenge. You play well when you get a result like this. The businessman says, well, maybe we could keep going for another 37 games this season and it'll all work out.
What was you meaning when there's not enough time?
I'm just saying, like, is it not better to, if you've got targets that you do want to bring in with the money that Kane's going to bring you, don't you want to get
you
the
know what Daniel Levy's target
starts?
Is? What, you know what Daniel Levy's target is? To get the most money for his club that he can. He won't be the first chairman to leave a manager hanging on a transfer deadline day. So, I mean, it's not ideal, but I think that's the way Tottenham are going to try and drive this. They're going to feed on Manchester City's desperation. And they've already showed their hand. They want him badly. And I'm sure they're prepared to pay the money. Levy knows this. And I'm afraid the Tottenham manager probably knows he could come unstuck with a man down come the end of the deadline.
Let's talk about how he would be replaced, though, Jules. Is there anybody that they've got their eye on at Spurs?
I think they're searching already. We know they have a new sporting director in Fabio Paratici, who's just arrived from Juventus. And funnily enough, or maybe coincidence or not, but some of the names that we know that they're following are from Serie A. Lautaro Martinez is one of them, although we saw his agent again today saying he will stay at Inter. But Romelu Lukaku also said that he was going to stay at Inter and he's not an Inter player anymore. Same with Vlahovic at Fiorentina, who we know will be expensive. But also we know that he's young, he's got plenty of talent. He had a great season last year in Serie A. And maybe this is the right time for a club like Spurs, if Kane leaves, to go and get someone like Vlahovic, who's a different profile but has some similarities with Kane's game too. So there's a lot of things they can do. And you also wonder if the 50 million, for example, they spend on Cristiano Romero, the centre-back from Atalanta and Argentina, is maybe some of that money was already anticipating the Kane money. A bit like what Villa did with Buendia before Grealish deal was done. So I think they will be getting ready. They know that the offer is coming from City, and our colleague Rob Dawson in Manchester is reporting it today, tonight on the ESPN website. So we know it's coming. And then I think the negotiation will start. But I agree with Greg. I think eventually this deal will happen. But I'm with you too. I think, yeah, of course, the sooner the better, because then you have more time to spend the money on the players that you want. But also, Craig's point is right. Daniel Levy wants as much money as he can, and he knows that he's in a very strong position too.
And it looks as though Pep's not so confident at the moment, even though the City Chiefs are worrying a little bit. And you can understand, after losing the first game, these are the first 8 Premier League games last season. It was a slow start for them, we know, and we know they turned it all around. But surely, with what we've seen so far, and I know you can't draw too many judgments, they can't afford a slow start this season, Craig.
Well, maybe they can, who knows? Because I remember chatting to I'm not going to name him, somebody said, who's going to put a run together? And I said, City, last year, and because they were by far, on paper, the strongest team. But it's not ideal. And they were poor yesterday. And he's got, listen, he has a striker, Gabriel Jesus. He just doesn't particularly like him as a guy who's going to lead the line for him. He shoves him on as a sub and he puts him out wide, but he has a striker. I think he's got other concerns. I think Mendy's a weak link at left back. I don't think he'll play much. I think Grealish is going to be an interesting one for that money. What's the deal in going around getting, and I know it wasn't his fault, but once again he was fouled umpteen times. But it's all about end product for him. And maybe the fact that he is getting fouled is the fact that at Aston Villa he's holding on to the ball a little bit, two touches, three touches, four touches, five touches, and he's going to have to get into the habit, I think, at City of moving the ball quicker. One, because that's the way they play, and two, just try and stop all these fouls that the referees will have to look at for sure. But I remember Riyad Mahrez when he went there, yeah, and it was touch after touch after touch, and I think Guardiola said to him, listen, that's not the way this is not Leicester. You know, this is not the way we do it here. So I think it's not the only issue on yesterday's performance, the striking position, but I think it's one of them.
They paid a lot of money for Grealish, Shaka. What did you make of his performance yesterday?
I'm with Craig on this. Kind of played, as you saw him play for Villa, and at times for England. And it's it won't work for City, not the way they play and not the talent that he has around him. But as Craig rightly points out, Riyad Mahrez, same issue, and look how well that worked out for them in the end. For City, the big concern is, I thought they started well. And maybe had they got that early goal, we are having a different discussion. But from the time Spurs settled in to that game and the threat that City posed, after 25 minutes, I never really felt that Hugo Lloris was under any kind of trouble. On the other side of that same coin, Spurs on the counter-attack, with the pace that they had with Lucas Moura and Heung-Min Son, were frightening to City. And you always felt that that goal was going to come. You felt if anybody was going to score again, it would be Spurs. And that, for me, is a big concern for City. How do you play up against Spurs? Without that out-and-out striker, how can you again get round the back of a well-organised, well-manned defence? Because Spurs, not that they camped out, not that they parked the bus, they just knew what they were doing and had the players to keep City at bay. And they struggled. I thought they struggled for ideas, for large spells of that game. And that's a concern. It has to be. Especially, and Spurs failed to score in four games last season. Two of those against Manchester United, one against Spurs. One game down, already you play 70 minutes without threatening that much, outside the opening 20, I mean. That is something that obviously Pep Guardiola is trying to address with Harry Kane.
Well, you just mentioned Manchester United. Let's go there, Jules, and talk about Paul Pogba's performance in their opening game of the season. Many saying it was the Pogba of the French national team.
Even with the French national team, I've never seen it. It's not that I've never seen it. He's never done four assists in the same game. And again, this is not the kind of assist that sometimes are being counted as I pass the ball to Craig and Craig has a shot from 30 yards and he goes in and it's a goal. And my pass is an assist. No, those four assists were stellar assists. They were either first-time assist with great vision, perfect weight on the ball at the right time as well, or they were just great movement from Pogba, and I think he was fantastic. We've been told through the summer he's going to have a great season. He's happy to stay. I think he would have been happy to move, and there's still time, of course, if he wants. We know that the contract situation, just 1 year left on his contract, but he was fantastic. And of course, Leeds help because they're so open, they play so much, there's so much space for the opposition that it helps you. It won't be the same when you play against a team with 11 men behind the ball in the last 30 yards, but still, I thought he was amazing. And I think he's a good omen. And just to finish on earlier with City, the big difference for me is that United, as we're talking about United, will be stronger than last year. Chelsea will be stronger than last year. And I think if City miss the start of the campaign, this time they might not be able to catch up with the others because the others will be much stronger than they were last season.
You can throw Liverpool into that as well, primarily because the injured players...
And Liverpool, yeah, of course.
Because the injured players are back. Predominantly Van Dijk and Gomez have signed Konate. Thiago full season, the list goes on. But to go back to the Pogba, he was excellent. We talked about it at the weekend, I think it was on Saturday's show. Mm-hmm. We talked about the fact that, you know, let's revisit this in a couple of months. Because I have no real interest in eulogising about one performance, because Paul Pogba was brought to Man United to do this week in, week out. I mentioned it at the weekend, like Kane likes goals, like Giggs, like all those players. And if he does that, then they're in a really good position. But that's still a big question mark. And that's, again, what Jill said is something we touched on at the weekend, was, look, I think Man United would want to play Leeds every week. Because Leeds, they're exciting under Bielsa, but they need a slap around the back of the head and say, listen, sometimes you've got to try and do it a bit different. And when you're as open as that, and I feel like I'm repeating myself from Saturday, but when you play as open as that, and you have players of the skill set of Fernandes and Pogba who can pass the ball for fun, then that's what they're going to do. And so...
But you take
performance, but I just want to see it over a couple of months from Pogba.
Agreed. You take that performance, but this is a poor Pogba that's played more advanced than, say, we saw him last season at the very least, where at times Solskjaer played him more as a defensive midfielder than attacking than not. And this is where he found so much joy with Juventus. On that left-hand side of that midfield, playing more attacking, albeit Andrea Pirlo sitting behind him, but now you have Fred and McTominay. play Paul Pogba closer to the front man, play Paul Pogba closer to the attacking midfielder on that left-hand side, I continue to believe that's where you get the most success from him. That's what you saw. And while, yes, he'll be judged over the course of a season, what a way to start.
You picked City to win the league this season. If they don't get Kane, are you concerned about that prediction?
I'm never concerned about my predictions because I couldn't give a stuff. But I would still have them as favourites. But because I'm not judging on one game. I judge the performance like everybody else. And it wasn't a good performance. It was slow and it was predictable. And they have to put that right. But they have a manager who's generally always put that right. They've got players to come back. I would still have them as the favourites, but I think it'll be way more tricky. It's as simple as that. I think they're in more peril without a striker than they are if they get Kane, because I was watching these balls come into the box and I never felt that any City player really was going to get on the end of anything, and that's what they need.
I'm not that sure, and I tell you what Harry Kane or a striker like Harry Kane gives you: the ability to not play well and win games. That's what Harry Kane brings to City. For City to win this league, they have to play well every single game between now and the end of the season. They just can't afford too many blips because of the others, as everybody's mentioned, and how much better they are.
And also, we can talk about the signing of Grealish, and we can talk about the signing of potential signing of Kane. It comes back to one thing: when De Bruyne is out that side, it's not the same. And we saw when he came on in his short cameo what he brings. And that's the position Jack Grealish is in now, that he's not at Aston Villa where his performances shine. This might sound strange, but even his performances at Man City might go unnoticed by other players superseding him. And everybody was saying to me, and I like Jack Grealish, but everybody said, well, people were saying, well, they don't have his kind of player because he beats people up, does he? I don't really see him beating people that much. I see him taking the ball in tight areas and people have been tight to him, and he maybe spins away from somebody in the middle of the park, but I don't see him beating people in the final third that some think that he does. And I don't really see that end product from him. 6 goals last year at Aston Villa is... average at best.
It was Aston Villa.
It's all right. Harry Kane to score the goals.
It's average at best, right? And so he's going to have to... And it's only one game. He's going to have to up his game as well. That's what I'm saying. So there's lots of questions out there and pressures on Guardiola because he's already spent big.
Lots of questions we'll have answering in extra time as
Hopefully
well. Shaka will be back with us. Craig and Jules as well. But Shaka's jumping out now, so we thank him for being with us in this segment.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Well, it was certainly an entertaining opening weekend in La Liga with Barcelona, Real Madrid and Atleti all winning their games. We now welcome in Casey Keller. He's been across our coverage all weekend. And Sid Lowe is with us as well. Let's talk about Barcelona, though, Craig. I'll start with you because it was all doom and gloom all week, and understandably so.
Not for me. You're talking to Mr. Positive.
Lionel Messi has gone, and obviously cause so much upset, understandably so. Yeah. But it was a good positive start from them, despite that.
Well, two worlds collided here. One, the more than slightly disappointing Real Sociedad, and two, an energetic Barcelona, who I think the players looked to me as if they wanted just to get on, to put all the saga, or as much of the saga as they could behind them, and actually get back on the field, or get on that field and start playing some football. And I thought they did that very well. Okay, at one point, near the end, before the fourth goal went in, it looked a little concerning when Ronald Koeman had said, OK, I'll start resting people and I'll bring all these youngsters on and I'll make changes. And then Sociedad scored that great goal from the, I think it was a youngster, Aldo debut. It was his debut goal. Fantastic finish. And then the free kick that wasn't a free kick, but certainly it was a great finish. But apart from that, for long periods, I thought it was quite easy for Barcelona. And the way they moved the ball about from the middle of the park up to the front guys and got down the wide positions at times, I thought it was actually quite good. So bearing in mind the saga that you mentioned, I thought it was a pretty good opening weekend for them.
Well, there's more drama to get to off the pitch, and we will get to it. But
oh, there's more.
Would you agree with what Craig's saying there, Casey?
Yeah, I mean, practice? I think if you look at the starting 11, it's a solid team still. The question is going to be when the squad comes into play, because as you saw, when Koeman had decided to make changes at 3-0 up, it looked young and it looked naive, and it allowed Sociedad to come back. Now, still, it's not a Barcelona squad that of 10, 20 years ago where they're going to, you say, okay, where are they going to lose? And obviously without a Messi, there's some differences, but it's still a good team that's going to win a lot of games in La Liga. Now, are they going to be able to compete for the title? Are they going to be able to compete in Europe? I don't think so. But then when you look at a Real Madrid side, that's not a Real Madrid squad that you would have seen a few years ago. It's an Atletico Madrid that still is going to be solid defensively, but they're going to underwhelm you in their attacking play, but can make things difficult. But it's a Barcelona team that did what it needed to do, albeit with a little bit of nerves at the end that maybe they didn't need to have.
Well, there's doing what you need to do, and then there's going above and beyond. And Gerard Piqué took a pay cut to allow players to be registered before the opening day. Tell us more about everything that happened there, Sid.
Well, this happened the day before the game, which I think gives you a good example of just how tight the timing was on this, how close they were to trying to get these players registered. But they needed something to shift for them to be able to get Memphis Depay and Eric Garcia registered with the league and to comply with La Liga's salary limits. So Piqué, and he explained this after the game last night, was the first player to say, yep, I'll take a pay cut, a deferral and a cut, although we don't know the exact figures on this. It must have been pretty significant, by the way, to have got them under the bar enough to be able to get both Eric and Memphis Depay in. And that's obviously a big question mark, is how much of a cut was there and how much did it need to get those two under the bar. That enabled them to play. The club are now saying that they hope that the other captains will follow suit. That, of course, means Sergio Roberto, Sergio Busquets and Jordi Alba. But Piqué was the first. He said after the game, because of a question of timing, because we needed to do it now, that's why I was the first. But the other captains have been talking to me about this. We're all in agreement and they will all be making an effort on behalf of the club.
Why, Sid, I'm intrigued by this. Why now that those players are registered to play, would others take a pay cut? Is that to try and get extra bodies in? Or, I mean, what's the deal here?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question, Craig. I mean, obviously, look, the first thing to say, of course, is there's still Sergio Agüero, who hasn't yet been registered and at some point will need to be, if indeed Agüero even stays. And I'm fairly clear that he's not that keen on doing so now, but it's not that easy either to find an exit strategy for him. So you have a situation in which you would need a bit more, I think, to be able to register him. I guess the other thing is just that Barcelona and Joan Laporta gave a press conference today in which he underlined that really genuinely dramatic economic crisis at the club. And so they need these savings to be made, even if it's not just about the salary limit. They need these savings to be made because it's just unsustainable at the moment. Laporta said they're still running at 103% of all income is going on players' salaries. So they need to make those cuts anyway, regardless of whether or not it's a question of them getting under the bar for the salary limits. And so that's really, really important. The other part of this, of course, is that having Piqué done it, it would look very, very bizarre if the rest of them didn't follow suit.
Sid, did someone sabotage the lights there? Like what we saw at Rayo Vallecano?
My studio light has just gone. That's brilliant.
That's all right, though. You'll be saving money as well, just like Barcelona needs to do.
Everybody's saving money in Spain.
Well, but I think what it really shows you is just how poorly Barcelona has been run. That they need to ask a player the day before the first game to take a pay cut so they can get two other players that can play. I mean, you've had all summer knowing that you're...
How poorly Sid mentioned what's going on. $1.35 billion when he opened up about the club's problems and finances.
I'm not taking a pay cut. I know Gerard Pique has done so for the players to be registered. I commend them for doing that, because on last week's show, I think I was saying, look, there's a difference here. If the club are asking you to take a pay cut because people are going to lose jobs through the pandemic, and there's a difference between take a pay cut because we have just mismanaged the situation and we want to sign other players. So I'm not sure. It would depend what the situation was. If I was in that scenario, right, whether I'm taking a pay cut or not, because I've signed that contract under good faith. Anyway, I mean...
But I think what we haven't been told is that Shakira has been promised the stadium twice to fill out to make the money back.
Obviously, there could be a lot more to...
Well, that's an interesting thing that Sid said there, that the Aguero scenario rumbles on, and
But if you're so bankrupt, why are you signing him in the first place? Why don't you now just say, Sergio, if you're happy to go, we're happy to let you go because we can't afford you in the first place.
Martin Brathwaite, who scored two goals and looked okay on the opening day.
So we have a scenario here where, as Sid just pointed out, that the other captains at the club are under some pressure to take a pay cut. And yet, as Casey just mentioned, please take a pay cut. Listen, this club's, it's unsustainable. But we're going to go out in the summer and we're going to sign Memphis Depay and we're going to sign Eric Garcia and we're going to sign Sergio Aguero.
And apparently Ronald Koeman wants to sign another forward. Is it true that he said that, Sid?
Yes, he did in the press conference before the game. In fairness to Koeman, and I must confess my first response to this was that it was a baffling thing to say. In fairness to him, he said, if the circumstances allow us to do so. So he's aware of the financial difficulties they've got. But I still think it's a curious request because, of course, you look at the Barcelona team, and to be perfectly honest, it's not up front that they have enormous problems. Now, we know, of course, that Messi's gone, but they have a lot of forwards. What they don't really have, I suppose, is an out-and-out striker. The only real number nine is Aguero. They're not sure what's going to happen with him. He's now injured. He'll be out for probably the best part of 7-8 or maybe even 9-10 weeks. Whether he will then come back and be ready to go, whether he's particularly keen to stay. In fact, we know that he's not particularly keen to stay. Then, of course, that becomes an issue as well. But I think, and you know, this was mentioned earlier, that the starting 11 of Barcelona is pretty good, but they're very weak in terms of strength and depth. But it's in midfield that they're weak more than the forward line. You look in the forward line, admittedly, they're more like wide forwards, but they've got a lot of players. But yes, he would like a number nine if he can get one. The question is really, can he? Because the financial constraints don't really allow for that.
Good conversation to have, that, innit, Case? With your chief executive, your chairman, your owner, with your president, whatever it is, when you sit down and he says, manager would really like another number nine. Does that coax you into a pay cut?
I know, obviously.
I've got this pay cut. I've got this tail between my legs now with this pay cut stuff.
Yeah.
Seriously. This is the same club that went, and I'll go back over this, and I don't care how many times, within the legal loophole of La Liga, they went and pilfered Martin Braithwaite, call him what you like, from Leganés.
Leganés, yeah.
And yet, here we have a scenario where they've signed one of the leading goal scorers of the last decade, albeit at the wrong side of 30, in Sergio Aguero. They can't get him registered. He's not particularly happy with the situation.
Well, he thought he was going to play with his friend Messi, because Messi said, I've got the deal done, and then, oh, no, we can't afford the deal now.
We've got players coming in who are registered at the last minute because a senior player has taken a wage cut. We have a manager talking about bringing another player in, but that's going to be dependent on either A, players leaving, or B, more players taking a pay cut. But this stinks.
You can say, obviously, it stinks, and it's understandable to say that, but can you see if Pique thinks, if this is the only way, then I do want to do what I can for my club.
Well, that's up to Gerard Pique. Gerard Pique is not Sergio Roberto or Sergio Busquets or anybody else, right? Why? Because one sheep's trotted off down the road, should all the other sheep follow?
Well, to me,
it's not their fault.
To me, the problem is it sounds like they go to Pique because they can go to him and they can say, oh, by the way.
And he's got a gazillion dollars in the bank.
Well, that, so. And your girlfriend, wife, makes more money than you do. So let's go to him first. It's just poor, poor management. And it's been happening at Barcelona for a period of time, and it's catching up to them, and the pandemic has accelerated it. But this was just a matter of time anyway. And they need to, the problem also is Laporte comes in as the new president saying, oh, I'm going to sort all this out. And he's he's done everything but. So
Gerrard Pique is an exception to the rule.
Yes.
This is not the way generally players think. Lionel Messi has gone to PSG for what? A packet of crisps and a bottle of juice?
No, about a million a week. Yeah.
Right. Because it's still about the money.
It's still business. And it's still your job.
So he's an exception to that rule. And we can forget all the morality around this about, well, they'll not get any more. Let me tell you how most players think. Most players push for, like any other job, they push for the biggest salary they can get and the best deal they can get, right? They don't go in and sit and think, well, we're not going to be able to sign anybody if I don't take a pay cut, so I'm going to take a pay cut. 99.999% of professional players that Casey and I know in a dressing room would not even entertain it. Is that, am I?
Back to your point, though. We all understand extenuating circumstances, and obviously a pandemic is an extenuating circumstance. If it means we all take a little bit of a cut because 20 of the staff are going to get released if we don't, we understand that. But once the stadium's back open, once the thing, it goes back to normal. Not this, so then, oh, by the way, here's another couple million that we're going to spend on this person. But we're going to death by a thousand cuts, by all these little pay cuts. So then what? Oh, because we need another striker. Come on, it's ridiculous.
Let's get on to the man who did score the goals then, most of the goals anyway for them, Sid. Martin Brathwaite, how's his future looking at Barcelona?
Well, he's quite an interesting case, of course, Martin Brathwaite, because this is a player that doesn't have a huge salary compared to a lot of his teammates. And so from Barcelona's point of view, in terms of making savings, moving Martin Brathwaite on doesn't make a huge impact on that salary limit. It doesn't really resolve very many of your problems. The problem with that statement is that he's one of those players that they believe they could get a transfer fee for. So what they don't make in salary, precisely because he's a player who would be affordable for other clubs, they feel that they might get in a transfer fee from say an English club, not one of the biggest ones, but from an English club. Now, the problem they have is that Martin Brathwaite knows that Barcelona are in financial trouble. He knows that if he hangs on, he's going to have opportunities that he may not have had otherwise. He has the intelligence, I think, on the pitch and off it to understand that situation and to realise this is actually a good opportunity for him. And so therefore, this isn't the time to go. This is absolutely not the time to go for him. That he will get game time if he stays, and I think he believes that he's intelligent enough that in a collective system, he can be useful. So right now, unless someone really, really big comes for Brathwaite, he's not going to go, because why would he? Because at the moment, he's looking at this and thinking, wow, this is a chance at Barcelona. Why would I leave that to play at a team, you know, for argument's sake, from the bottom half of the Premier League? It's just not worth it for him.
Well, why is it worth it for him? It's worth it for him because that club might come in and double his wages to go in, and he's not sure if he's going to get paid for 6 months
at
Barcelona.
That's the thing, they're not going to.
Okay, yeah. Well, one man who's going nowhere, and Madridistas will be happy about this, is Karim Benzema, and he was on the score sheet again with two goals in the 4-1 win against Alaves on Saturday. He just keeps on performing for Real Madrid season after season. And you still wonder why. We often talk about these world strikers and those who are putting the goals away. Sometimes I feel that Benzema's name doesn't get put into that list as much as it should, Craig.
Well, I've always thought he's... I think most of us always thought he's an incredibly consistent player. Absolutely fantastic goal scorer. This was a weird game because in some sense Alaves shot themselves in the foot because they were really good actually for 45 minutes.
Yeah, first half they were frustrated Real Madrid.
Real Madrid were poor and Alaves on the counter-attack, particularly down the right, had the best chance in the first half. And the frustrating thing I think from Alaves' point of view is that Real Madrid didn't have to do a lot to get their goals, particularly the first couple. But once Benzema gets them in the lead, then it's always an uphill battle. And Alaves, who I think finished 16th last year, they just sort of ran out of legs and they crumbled. And it looked way easier in the end than it was.
They just survived last year.
Yeah. So you look at it and you say, oh, four goals for Real Madrid, really good. Don't think it was, but it certainly was a better second half than it was first half, because it was a struggle for a long time.
Well, one thing you don't often see, Sid, because they're usually very telling, is the Spanish press giving praise to Real Madrid's players, and it does feel as though it was more positive than we've seen. Recently, they picked out players like Vinicius, Bale, Hazard, saying they looked good. And we're honest about Ancelotti and what he's asking from his team. What's the reaction been back there?
Well, if I give you the headline in AS, and I must admit, I think this headline was absolutely inevitable. Whoever of the old players had played well in a summer in which the only signing has been David Alaba, I can guarantee the headline would have been, the signing is whoever it may be. So the headline in front of AS was, the signing is Benzema. If Bale had scored, it would have been, the signing is Bale. Because, of course, that's the mindset at the moment, is how do you get, effectively, a new player from a situation in which you haven't bought any new players in. Now, obviously, in the case of Benzema, it's a headline that makes even less sense, because he was incredibly consistent last season, played brilliantly last season, played very, very well indeed the season before that as well. It would have made a bit more sense if it had been Bale, who at least has come back. It would have made a bit more sense if it had been Hazard, who's basically done nothing through injury and poor form for 2 years. As it was Benzema. But I think there is a sense that Ancelotti is the right kind of man in terms of recovering players, in terms of getting performances out of players who you wondered if they could still do it.
And talking about players, new signings, one player that we just keep hearing the name of, particularly in the press, on a daily basis, is Kylian Mbappe. Seems they are still holding out for perhaps a chance that they could get him this summer, right?
That's what Real Madrid would love to do. If they believe it, if they find a way to make it happen, they would love to do it now. They believe that they are in a very strong position to take him on a free next summer. But of course, clubs are never completely confident about that. And that's one of the reasons why sometimes clubs pay more than you would imagine them doing so for one season of a player, when they could just wait a year. Sometimes you think, well, why didn't they just wait a year, get this player for free? Well, obviously, because if you get a player for free, there's a huge signing on bonus anyway. But also, if you leave it a year, things can change. Other clubs can get in ahead of you. You might not be in control of the situation. If you can get that player tied down, you absolutely do it. Real Madrid now are basically waiting for Mbappe to kind of tip the balance, to say to PSG that he wants to go, to say to PSG that not only does he want to go, but he wants to go now. And if that happens, they will make the effort to get him this summer. But they're aware that it could well be difficult, and they're aware that PSG are not a club that sell very, very easily. And if needs be, they will wait till next year.
Do they have the financial situation to be able to make that move right now? I mean, I'm hearing that they're still in debt and struggling and don't have the money. So obviously they're going to have to pay him a bunch of money, not only in salary, but a big transfer as well.
Yeah. So the situation with Real Madrid is not enormously different from Barcelona. Well, it is. It's enormously different from Barcelona, but it's not great. So, for example, when Ancelotti took over, the conversation with Real Madrid was very much, look, there won't be signings. There isn't the money there. We have to work with the squad that we've got. And so they're aware that that money is tight. That said, last year they managed to make a profit despite the pandemic. A tiny profit, but they did manage to make a profit. So they've been very, very careful with their finances in a way that Barcelona have not been able to do. What little money they've been able to save, they've been effectively putting it into a piggy bank that says Kylian Mbappe on the side of it, that they've been waiting for. Varane went for 50 million. They're hopeful that they would get a reasonably big fee, say 30, 40 million for Martin Odegaard if he eventually goes to Arsenal. They believe that they might still be able to make sales, possibly Dani Ceballos, but there have been savings across the board. And so they think they could put the money together to make a reasonable bid in the region of 100 million euros for Kylian Mbappe.
I wonder if they could throw in, I don't know, Sid, where's the piggy bank for Erling Haaland? There's got to be a piggy bank for him as well. But, I wonder if would PSG entertain somebody like Eden Hazard in a cash deal? Something like, you know, I just wonder if there's anything else apart from cash only that Real Madrid could tempt.
Knowing that they're going to get something now as opposed to nothing next summer, potentially.
All right. Well, maybe they could do that. Enough, yeah.
I don't know. I'm just suggesting that, you know.
But obviously, they're going to have to do something to get him. But we're speculating whether it's going to be players, money, what now?
Well, the thing is with Mbappe is like there has been stories, and our colleague Julian, I believe, has sort of poo-pooed them a little bit, that he knows this big circus is around Messi.
Right.
And he has shown signs in the last 12 months or so that he does like it to be about himself, Kylian Mbappe. And so I don't think they're totally unfounded that he's not as happy and it might not be another full year for him. And
I
just
feel like even Jules was just changing
First of all, I was thinking he's going to stay for another year and Real Madrid will get him in a free transfer. They're going to have a big season with him, Messi and Neymar there, and they're going to have an all-out assault on the Champions League. But as little stories have filtered out, all might not seem quite as well right. as one first thought. And so I think that's probably, as Sid was saying, why Real Madrid think there is a small minor chance that they may be able to do something, but it would have to come, as Sid said, from the Mbappe camp, that he's not happy and he wants to leave now and he doesn't want to wait.
So think
Mbappe, then they would have to do a deal.
Think Mbappe goes, joins his French teammate Benzema, and the two of them are now this big thing in Madrid, and let Messi and Neymar rekindle their Barcelona relationship. And yeah, look, you can see where
and
it makes
hopefully
sense.
Hopefully, they meet in
whose
the Champions
parents
League
were final? Fighting in the French squad?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to figure that out. Who we decide who makes
right.
a move?
Atleti also winning.
Yes.
Let's get a quick comment on them. Well, there was a brawl as well in this game
well,
against Celta.
It's
very typically Atleti against Celta.
Yeah. But I thought, and give Celta some credit. I mean, after a really poor start last season, they played very well and pushed for European spots. They're in last place after 10 matches last season, and they finish in eighth. So they're not a pushover. Aspas missed a really good chance where he rounded Oblak. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, Atleti were a little bit fortunate to come away with all 3 points in this match. I think they've been disrespected by the bookies. They've been disrespected by a lot, thinking that they're the third favorite to regain the title. I wouldn't want to bet against Simeone.
Yeah.
I mean, it just shows that they've...
And don't bet against
Angel
Correa either. Both
yeah,
the goals come
Yeah, Correa, fantastic finishes from Angel.
So these are the odds to win La Liga. Real Madrid are favourites. And then this is the order as well. Barcelona, then Atleti Sevilla.
Wow.
Of the three over the weekend, Sid, who do you think looked best for their win?
Well, I suppose it's between Madrid and Barcelona, given that Atletico Madrid had to suffer a little bit to find a way through Celta. But then we know that Atletico are very good at doing that. I agree with the guys in the studio. I didn't think Real Madrid were good at all in the first half. But then you did see something of them in the second. And watching Modric and Benzema in particular, you just look at them and think these are just players who are just on a different level to almost everybody else, you know, technically, in terms of their understanding of the game. I guess the most positive of the weekend's results is probably Barcelona, if only because there was a sense of trepidation about the future and a sense of, you know, could this be a really disastrous season? And this is a start that at very least allows for some optimism when last week we probably didn't think there was any at all.
We've got more La Liga chat on the Gab and Jules podcast. Gab is actually back from his Alpine retreat.
Oh, well, that's Jules finished. He won't get a word then now.
Download that if you'd like to hear.
You might as well stay at home.
And Jules podcast.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I tell you, there is a young Norwegian who might be a bit bigger in Germany right now.
We just saw him.
Yes.
Not Fjortoft. Erling Haaland. What a performance.
Well,
honestly,
I was talking about it at the weekend. It's like... It's tough to find something bad to say about him.
Yep.
Because every time we sit and discuss Dortmund or German football, we're eulogising about something that he's done again.
Right.
And
there's the Lewandowski, one side of it, and then everything else is around.
And I was watching here on Saturday when Archie and Jan were interviewing him, and I was just, I was sat back in amazement, because I have, every time I see him, I think he's grown even bigger. And you know, this is the worst thing that you can do here, is let a ball bounce when he's around. But once again, he showcased at the weekend, opening day of the Bundesliga weekend, opening weekend, sorry. He has bullied defenders again, he's linked up with his teammates, and he scored vital goals. I mean, it's just going to be every week with this guy, I think, whilst he's fit. It's, I never thought we would see, talk about somebody in a sense that we talked about Ronaldo and Messi, and it's very early, but what I'm saying is that every time we see a game, yep, we tend to be talking about something special. Now, it only felt like kind of those players in the last decade that we were discussing these things, but it seems that every time Dortmund play, we're discussing another special moment from a special player. There's no getting away from it. He's mesmerising.
Archie in Twitter is with us. And Archie, you were at that game against Eintracht Frankfurt at the weekend. We did see that wonderful double interview with yourself and Jan-Ager Fjartoff on Gio Reyna and Erling Haaland. Tell me a little bit about what it's like to actually see him in the flesh, because when you are seeing players like this in real life, it's something to behold most of the time, isn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking about this today, and I think the best comparison I can draw is that moment in Jurassic Park where they see the dinosaurs for the first time and your jaw just drops and you're like, whoa. I find it very difficult to keep up with the speed of which everything happens around Erling Haaland. To properly understand it and appreciate it, I'm having to watch it back several times. But I mean, I'm a little bit annoyed at him because his first goal that he scored meant I got a really nice beer shower from the Dortmund fans on Saturday. But honestly, it is a privilege to see somebody who is just so in charge of his craft, and the way that he runs, it's almost like a superhero without a cape. Like, he just seems to kind of fly around on his own axis, and he scares the living daylights out of defenders.
It's almost like it's not coming as a surprise, though, when we see these great performances from Erling Haaland. So what's the reaction in the German press and in the football world when they are seeing performances like we saw at the weekend?
Yeah, just to say on how he's developed himself, I was told at the weekend that he put in lots of extra shifts himself with Lucien Favre, Borussia Dortmund's previous coach before Edin Terzic took over, and how Favre personally coached Haaland in trying to improve himself trying to improve his right foot, just all round elements of his game. And I think you can see these elements really bearing fruit now, particularly when he's dribbling. Erling Haaland is 1.95 meters. This is very much tall, and the tall players are not known, I would say, for their elegance on the whole in football. And yet, he just seems to have this movement about him that enables him to do everything. And one for everything is what the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung is saying here, because he played a role in all five of Dortmund's goals at the weekend. There is a lot of hype about Erling Haaland, talking about the hope that Haaland represents here as well, because Erling Haaland has this ability to bend games to his own will. He has that big game player ability, and that is what's exciting in the space of the Bundesliga title race this season, because if Erling Haaland keeps himself fit and if Dortmund manage to manage his enthusiasm, then I think that we could have a very interesting season.
That we've got a very interesting game to watch between Bayern and Dortmund this week in the Super Cup. You're going to be on the call for that, Casey.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at an explosive front four for Borussia Dortmund that are as entertaining and energetic as any group you're going to see in world football right now. Against a Bayern side that have won everything on the planet, and it's really hard to bet against regardless of what's going on. The question mark as you look at this lineup is the center back role. Axel Witsel is anything but a center back. he was asked to play this role, and at times he looked like a defensive midfielder playing center back. Emre Can is going to be asked to play center back at times. We know that Mats Hummels isn't getting any younger, so there are some questions with this Dortmund side defensively. They are going to be one of those entertaining teams that know they're going to have to outscore their opponents every match, and they're going to throw numbers forward. There's still some question marks with Bayern Munich as well. Upamecano did not look comfortable the other day. He hadn't looked comfortable in the second half of the season before he made that move. Nicolas Sula has had his issues as well. So I'm really interested to see, again, how Bayern Munich fixes their defensive issues. They conceded so many goals last year, which is just uncharacteristic for a Bayern Munich side. But at the same time, you look at that front four, and that front four has no problem outscoring any opponent as well. So there's a lot of thought that the Bundesliga is the league to watch if you want to see a bunch of goals.
It's a good marker to put down if you're Dortmund. We know this might be a more difficult season for Bayern with the players that they've lost and the new coach coming in and the transition that he's going to have to make. And of course, as good as Lewandowski is, it's another year down the line. Yep. It's another year for Müller. Sané was unconvincing last year. They lost Alaba, they lost Boateng. Did create a lot of chances at the weekend. But, you know, I think from Dortmund's perspective, playing Bayern Munich and beating Bayern Munich over the course of a season, it's probably not going to come down to what Erling Haaland can do, although that will be a big piece of it. It's going to come down to what's going to happen at the other end over the course of a long season. Do they have the right structure, the right players in place to be defensively solid enough? We're going to find out. Interestingly enough, Archie, I'm intrigued. With the football season having started, did Dortmund feel that all the talk and all the headlines surrounding Alfie Haaland and the potential transfer that seemed over the summer, do they feel that that's now gone away before this transfer window finishes and that he himself and they can concentrate on the season ahead?
Yeah, very much so. I actually saw Alfinger Haaland behind the press box with Erling Haaland's two younger sisters who hadn't seen him play before, and just the general vibe that you got watching them, it wasn't like, oh, well, he needs to get out of here. I can't see any situation where Erling Haaland leaves Borussia Dortmund either this summer or even in January. One of the hierarchy, Sebastian Kehl, I think his official role is a team manager, has reiterated this, that he is not going anywhere. And yeah, it would be, I think, someone would have to come in with the most unbelievable offer of all time to even tempt Dortmund away right now.
So tell us a little bit about the Super Cup, Archie. How's it viewed in Germany? Is it a big deal, maybe more so with these two playing against each other as well?
I think that's it. If it's Borussia Dortmund against Bayern Munich, then people are going to watch. And there are some interesting storylines here as well. The fact that Marco Rosa and Julian Nagelsmann are both new at their clubs, there is pressure on them to get one over their biggest rivals early on in the season. Particularly for Julian Nagelsmann, who had a really poor record against Borussia Dortmund when he was with RB Leipzig, and for Deo Upamecano as well, because the last two games that I've seen Erling Haaland play against RB Leipzig, he has destroyed them. My main memory of the DFB Cup final in May is of Erling Haaland leaving Deo Upamecano on his backside in the penalty area as he scored in that game. And I think that there's real pressure on how Upamecano plays in this game. Julian Nagelsmann's already been defending him today in his press conference, talking about the bad ratings that he'd been getting from the German press and how he thought that was a little bit harsh. But coming back to what Craig was saying, he's been playing badly for a while now, and whilst Julian Nagelsmann was calling him a young player, this is one of the best, or one of the supposed best centre-backs in world football. He needs to find his feet quickly at Bayern, particularly with their strength in depth in the squad right now, with injuries and just general depth in the squad not looking too great.
Okay, so if you had a cheeky €5 and you were going to put it on one of the teams to win, who would you put it on, Archie? Just the Super Cup, not the title.
I'd put it on Dortmund.
Okay.
So one of the questions when Bayern made the decision to go after Nagelsmann was, he's never won anything. At RB Leipzig, he had some great years.
He's in his early 30s.
You know, he's in his early 30s, but you're going to Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich's an expectation that you're winning something every year, and you don't have a history of winning anything. When Niko Kovac signed, he had just beat Bayern, the club that he'd already signed a contract for, in the German Cup. So Nagelsmann being revered so greatly, doing a lot of good things at RB Leipzig, but never producing a trophy.
Well, so what do you think he's going to do tomorrow? Can they win it?
Dortmund.
Yeah, I think Dortmund are the favorites in this match, and that's hard to say any time when you go up against Bayern Munich. So, but I think if Nagelsmann can get that win, bring that first trophy, albeit we know it's not a monumental trophy, but to be able to bring home something will really help that confidence for everybody at Bayern.
I think it was Archie that mentioned this last year. The difference in dynamic here is that Nagelsmann was the star at Leipzig with some good players, but he's the manager,
right,
coach at Bayern Munich. The stars are the ones that are on the field, and so the dynamic is he's now going to have to get them thinking the way he wants to do things, which probably is different from previous coaches, and sometimes that's not as easy when you're trying to preach to the Müllers and the Lewandowski. Well,
especially when
it's not like trying to preach to Forsberg and Poulsen and Sabitzer. Yeah. As good of players as they are.
Well, and you're following up from Hansi Flick, who won everything and was obviously disgruntled enough to leave.
Can I go back to Haaland?
Go on then, because we've got to wrap it up.
All right. The one thing I don't get, and as Archie said, it needs to be a monumental bid to get him away. Unless a deal can't be done. If I was, say, Man City or in these clubs and I'd spent $100 million on Grealish and I might be spending $120 million plus on Harry Kane, is it just, am I barking up the wrong tree here to say, why wouldn't you take that money and go and get a player who is arguably the best young player in the world as we speak and make that offer?
That's
going to make a difference, bigger difference than Grealish and Kane.
And your dad played for the club?
Do you know, I'm just saying this.
All right, we've got to wrap it up. So it's a clean sweep for Dortmund in the studio here and from Archie. You can see that game. It is the Super Cup between Dortmund and Bayern on Tuesday, 2:30 Eastern. It's available on ESPN Plus. Don't miss it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Get you caught up on the latest action from MLS, and we'll start with Chicago against Columbus. Just the one goal to show you. It's a blocked shot, which does fall to Luka Stojanovic, and he scores.
No, it's again, it's being the right place in the right time, being able to pivot, but it's the Columbus crew not playing particularly well at the moment.
All right, Casey, I'm going to let you take the bulk of this one, because this was a clash for the ages between Portland and Seattle, picking it up in the 13th minute.
Yeah, it's just the ball going in, just whizzed across, and Freddie Montero scored a bunch of goals against the Portland Timbers over his career and just is at the right spot at the right time. And then this time, Freddie makes the shot from distance.
Scoring two of them there within 30 minutes.
It's a decent shot, but obviously the Portland goalkeeper gets a good touch to it and can only push it into the upper corner. But Portland were fighting back. Blanco with a good run and gets the fortunate deflection. Shane O'Neill comes across to try to cover, and just that looping ball, and then this again, a shot from distance parried out, but falls kindly. And Fuchibe does a good job of just hitting it back in, but then Rui Diaz just smashes this free kick, Craig, into the upper corner.
Holy smokes.
Oh, wait till you
No point lying behind the wall in a free kick like that.
Wait till you see some of the goals that are to come.
Yeah, and then this one's just a goalkeeping mistake, just leaves it on a plate. You can't do that for Rui Diaz. There's a reason why he's the Leeds leading scorer, but how about this strike? Jimmy Madranda off the corner, full volley, 17 yards out, just slices it with the crossed his body, left foot off the underside of the crossbar.
He'll be trying that next week again.
He'll be trying that the rest of your career. And then just insult to injury, and the Portland Timbers at home in injury time concede their sixth to their biggest rival.
Yeah, 6.
The Seattle Sounders.
Yeah. That's something of a statement win, isn't it, Casey?
Well, it's tough because, you know, Giovanni Savarese, great guy, coach of the Portland Timbers, but I think that was the 34th goal they had conceded this season so far, and they've got big issues at the back that they have to clean up, and then losing at home to your biggest rivals, conceding 6. Now, 2 weeks' time, reverse fixture. Timbers play the Sounders at Lumen Field in Seattle. So it'll be a big test to see if they can put that result right.
That adds some extra spice to a clash that doesn't even need the extra spice. We know how much these two sides love to hate one another. This is how the West is shaping up at the moment. Timbers still there, above the line, though. In 7.
Just Sounders gaining a little bit. They spent so much time at the top. They've had a little bit of a blip recently after going the first 13 matches unbeaten. Kansas City had a good 2-0 win against Colorado. So Sounders in Kansas City fighting it out up top.
Meanwhile, over in the East, it's pretty much the same as we've known at the top all season so far. Yeah, Revs.
Bruce Arena and the Revolution really doing a good job so far. And can anybody catch them? I'm not sure.
Okay, bit of news as well for U.S. Women's National Team legend Carly Lloyd is hanging up her boots. 2-time World Cup winner is calling it a day. But what a legacy she leaves.
Well, yeah, you think that she played her first match for the U.S. National Team at 23 and now at 39 after I think the second most appearances in women's international. Phenomenal career, and at one stage, you know, probably the best women's soccer player on the planet. So, you know, excellent job. Time waits for no one, right?
39.
39.
My God.
In the Olympics, you see her running around
Obviously, she'll be disappointed with the results at the Olympics, but that takes nothing away from the phenomenal career that she's had.
Yep, she was on the pitch afterwards, still doing her runs. Game was over.
Well, you've got to look after yourself.
Yeah, well, she definitely has done that. And
she'll enjoy not looking after
herself. Yeah, well, she's brought some wonderful moments.
It's good fun, we wish
her the best, and thanks for all those moments to Carly. Thanks for joining us as well. Stick around for extra time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Craig, we have Shaka, and we have Jules, and we have lots of questions from you as well. Starting with one for Jules from Nunia Business, who says, Jules, does the absence of Messi give Barca's attack some unpredictability? When Messi was there, everyone just passed the ball to him. Now it's less predictable.
I'm not sure passing the ball to Messi is predictable in the sense that you still don't know what he would do with it afterwards, and it's not that easy to defend even if you knew what the patterns of play was going to be. But certainly it makes you look for other ways, other ways of attacking, other patterns of play. For example, the famous diagonal from Messi to Jordi Alba, this doesn't exist anymore, and we didn't see it against La Real Sociedad, for example, on Sunday. However, we saw other things, and that's what they have to do, and I guess in a way that's what's exciting for and those players, is that you need to build your game differently, you need to find your passes differently, almost find your style differently, and you almost start from scratch, from a fresh page, which I think with the good players that they have should be easier than if they had rubbish players to start with. And also, I think you can do it. It's not too hard to do.
All right, Ezio, let's stay another La Liga question.
I love people's analysis. I don't love that, I hate it. I love the analysis if it was... people just passed it to Messi and that's all it was.
Messi dependencia.
Messi. People just so predictable, they just passed it to Messi and everybody else just stood around.
Well, let's talk about a player in Real Madrid. Ezio says, Craig, Benzema has been a starter at Real Madrid for 12 years now. How big of an achievement is this? Good. At a huge club like Real Madrid, players get sold much faster usually. The only other players in my lifetime who have been there for over 12 years are Raul and Casillas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's been amazing. Consistency. Even as he's got older, he's actually got better. And when Ronaldo left, he stepped up and took the weight of that, almost that team on his shoulders. The French thing's been disappointing, of course, the side story. But in terms of his club, he has been, what would you say, the top. Always in the top three or four strikers in the last decade, every year almost. I mean, it's quite incredible.
Left Marcelo out there in players for over 12 years.
I'm hoping Marcelo as well.
Wonder why.
The thing with Benzema, and it's almost because of how good that Real Madrid team was, you kind of don't notice how good Benzema, how important he was. If you look at Benzema's stats, I heard somebody say the other day, I think leading assists, career assists for Real Madrid, second or third for goals. We're talking about a player who's in the top five in every single category for Real Madrid, a club as big as Real Madrid. Yet, I don't think Benzema's ever gotten that recognition or love, which is crazy.
Pope Sam says, Jules, when are we going to watch Messi make his debut? Can we expect something next week against Brest?
That's the big question everybody's asking, and I think Pochettino is working on it. I think Brest next week away might be just a little bit too early. They were more thinking about the following weekend. So the last weekend of August, just before the international break, PSG go away at Reims. And I think on the 29th, at the moment it's the 29th, and I think this is more likely to be the day where we see Messi finally playing for PSG, whether that's from the start or coming off the bench. I think Brest might be slightly too early. We will know a bit later in the week. And then his first home game will be after the international break, where he will go to Argentina, of course, for the World Cup qualifiers. And then that will be on September the 12th, or that weekend at least. But potentially more the 29th than the 22nd.
All right, we look forward to it. More for Jules, but this is a double question, so you're in here as well, Shaka. Kaneki Ken says, Jules, Mbappe is having some ego issues since last year. What do you think? Will he be able to form a great attacking trio with Messi and Neymar, just like MSN? And Shaka, my friend, why can't you accept that Messi is the GOAT? So we'll start with you, Shaka. Why can't you accept that Messi is the GOAT?
Yeah, why can't you?
Huh? I've explained this ad nauseum, in all honesty, and as much as that needle has moved significantly so since the Copa America, my friend, I'm not going over that again.
All right. Well, we will get Jules to go over the first part of the question then. In Mbappe forming a brilliant trident like the MSN, but this time with Messi and Neymar.
I cannot think that those great players cannot play together. I always thought that great players could do together, could play with anyone, could play with other great players. What's interesting though is the main reason why Mbappe hasn't renewed yet his PSG contract is he's saying, I want to win, I want a competitive team. And he also said, I want a great team. And he means by that, around myself, around me. It's a lot me, and whoever sent the question is right. There's been a lot of me lately. And PSG now saying, look, you've got the most competitive, this is the best, what more can we offer you? This is the best that we can do. Messi, Neymar, Verratti, Marquinhos, all those players. And yeah, I think the key in this is the me, is the great team around me. And I do wonder if at some point, I don't think this summer, but again, anything is possible, but I don't think he will go this summer, despite all the rumors that we can see in Spain, even people talking about if Mbappe goes now to Real Madrid, then Cristiano can come to Paris. I'm like, whoa, my head is exploding. However, there's been a lot of me, and it's true. And I do think that maybe at some point this would be the issue, is that Messi is fantastic, of course, and Neymar is great, and that front three is amazing. And even if you're Mbappe, you must be excited by that. And yet, I think somewhere in his head is, I have to be the number one. And right now in Paris, he's not the number one, let's be honest. And if he goes somewhere else, and in Real Madrid right now, I'm not even sure he will be the number one, but maybe closer to it than in Paris. I don't know. It's a really strange one. I'm a bit lost with it, I have to say.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Let me just point out as well that before now, whenever I said Messi wasn't the greatest of all time, Jules used to agree with me. As soon as Lionel Messi joins PSG,
what?
He
no
jumped
way
on that bandwagon.
That's not true.
Jules, I don't know what to say to you. I really don't.
Jules, you have the right to reply.
You know how much I love you,
Shaka. Have the right to jump back on the old bandwagon. As soon as he joins PSG, you change the tune, Jules.
Jules seems to have changed his tune just a little bit on whether Mbappe will be staying. I don't know if you're too sure anymore,
no,
Jules.
No. He will stay.
All right.
I guarantee you he will stay there.
Okay. Well, it links us perfectly to Cripple Nair's question for you, Craig. Does it make sense Mbappe joining Real Madrid, which has an ageing midfield and needs an overhaul in a season or two, to join a club where he can develop himself like Liverpool, City or Chelsea to be a better player like Haaland did by joining Dortmund?
Do you want to read that again?
It's <That's> a lot.
Let's just put it. Does it make sense for him to join a club where there's an ageing midfield that needs an overhaul than it does somewhere else where he could be developing, basically, with maybe a younger team around him?
Well, I presume they mean by the ageing midfield that his supply line will be shut down, potentially, because he's not going to play anywhere near the midfield. But Real Madrid are going to have to, they are going to have to overhaul that squad for sure. Kroos, Modric, Casemiro, Bale, Benzema eventually. Hazard doesn't look as if he'll be too far away unless something pops up. But they've done it before, so I think it's the allure of Madrid. And Mbappe on a free transfer next year. Yeah, I don't.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if by all report, according to all reports, Mbappe has always dreamt about playing for Real Madrid, as Ronaldo did some years before, you start with that one piece, and as they did around Ronaldo, you put the other pieces. They signed Ronaldo and Kaká one summer, and then Kroos comes in, and Casemiro comes in, and they start putting it all together, and then you end up with the kind of legacy that Ronaldo left there. So it's not that simple or that cut and dry for Mbappe.
Well, he's not. I don't think he'll come. I don't think he'll go to England.
Right.
Come to West Ham.
I don't think he'll go.
Mbappe should go to West Ham.
La Liga. All right. Ezio, Jules, as an Arsenal fan, how do you feel about their start to the season? Was Ben White a good investment? And can they make a run for top four?
So let's start with the most unlikely, the top four. I'm sorry, it's not for this season. I think we're pretty certain, even if they don't play in Europe, Jesus, which I think would be a huge advantage. I think top four, when you see the recruitment of United City, Liverpool to lesser degree, and Chelsea, I think unfortunately that's not reachable right now for Arsenal. I like Ben White, I like him a lot. I can understand why they went for him and not for another centre back, because I think he ticks a lot of the boxes of what Arteta wants his centre-back, a new centre-back, to do in terms of being a ball-playing centre-back, the speed that he has, the versatility that he has as well. Of course, he's young and he will make mistakes, and he needs to be the leader that I think needs a bit of time for him to develop into and become for a club like Arsenal. And for the rest, Friday was hard to watch, I have to say, and it's the same mistakes again, the defensive set pieces that we talked a lot last season, that we thought at times they were working on, and certainly the numbers were a bit better in the second half of last season. Yet, first game of this season, boom, two goals on defensive set pieces. And the one on a throw-in, I'm sorry, at that level, I can't accept it. So there's a lot of work to be done. And when you play Chelsea and City next, it's not a good look either.
You've got them in your top six, Craig, for this season.
Yeah, because I'm bored talking about this, because there was nobody else and I just couldn't be asked. Can I say that? Couldn't be bothered. Couldn't give a toss. By the way,
so how were you like Messi and bored?
What kind?
I don't understand.
What kind of
bored in your top six?
Well, it's, no, you're bored with the Messi comment.
Oh, okay.
I was bored when I got to four.
Yeah,
and said, give me a top six. And when I got to four, what I was like,
I feel like that's an excuse, Craig.
I don't
Jules,
care.
Jules a jump ship.
Listen, people.
Jules a jump
ship. I would love to know what kind of juice people are on before they send questions into this show. Making a run at the top four. They've just lost to Brentford, match day one. They've had a pretty horrendous transfer window thus far in terms of what they need, and all of a sudden they're going to punch a hole in the top four.
Well, it was a question.
A huh?
It was a question. You've got them in the top six.
It was a stupid question, right? Which is why I tell you what I like about this extra time.
I know what you're going to say.
What?
Nothing.
Correct. Nothing.
Well, let's end it there then, shall we?
Well, you obviously don't watch this extra time enough. I would end extra time after a second, every time.
Well, we love you on extra time.
End some of those stupid questions.
It's daily on ESPN FC, 7 days a week.
Nonsense.
Extra time too.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.